the issue of masculinity and Asianness had been on my consciousness for a long, long time. The birth of the idea and the title came from Manny Pacquiao, who's a champion boxer from the Philippines, was called a big little fighter by one of the HBO announcers, Larry Merchant. I actually thought about writing a book about him, addressing the same issues of masculinity and Asianness, some of the stereotypes of the Asian American men. But I ended up just writing a book about myself, because I've experienced a lot of things in my 50 years here in the United States. And so kept the title, Big Little Man, and tried to address the same issues I would have addressed had I written about Manny Pacquiao.
You grew up basically in the 1960s as a child and then spent the 70s as a teenager. You saw a lot of transitions in U.S. society, particularly with views toward Asians at that time.
Absolutely right. Yes, we arrived in 1964. Race was definitely part of the civic conversation that was going on at the time, although it was mostly in terms of black and white. Asians weren't discussed that much at all. The only time I really heard about Asians in the news, although they were referred to as Orientals at the time, was in the context of the Vietnam War. And so that was a double whammy on my experience in the United States, because my face resembles the face of the Viet Cong and the South Vietnamese. So in many ways, I had the face of the enemy. I felt that a little bit growing up in America in the 1960s and early 70s.
What were some of the issues that you dealt with specifically as you grew up?
I think there's been a long-running notion in the West that Asia was a continent of people that were easily conquerable, that people from Asia were weak, they were small in all ways, including physically small, geopolitically small, economically small. All of which are changing, of course. I definitely grew up with the notion that Asian men in particular were toward the bottom of the hierarchy of manhood. I didn't think it was even possible for someone like me to do anything terribly great. I actually graduated from high school in 1977, unable to name a single East Asian figure who was a force for good.
Well, a good bit of your book does deal with the size issue, if you will, from the perception of Asians being small in stature to the more personal aspects, which I understand your wife wasn't too thrilled with you writing about.
Well, she thought it was just juvenile. a lot of women think of this issue as kind of juvenile, you know, kind of a male preoccupation. And yes, so there are the sexual stereotypes. The thing about stereotypes, as we all know, there is often truth in them, but it's almost always a partial truth. I'll give you an example. Height. There's the idea that Asians are small, they're short people. And there's truth to that, because most people from Southeast Asia, from the southern part of the continent, they do tend to be shorter than the average Westerner. If you take Asia as a whole, if you go to northern China or even central China, that stereotype of Asians being small begins to dissipate.
Alex, I can't ignore two chapters in your book. They come early. One is called Seeking Hot Asian Babes. And then if that weren't enough, Babes Continued.
Yes. Yes. Those titles are meant as satirical. I spend most of the book talking about what it was like being a young Asian man growing up in the West and some of the challenges I faced. I couldn't ignore the fact that Asian women and Asian American women and girls face their own set of challenges and hardships, very different from the kinds that I faced. But it was definitely worth exploring, definitely worth spending two chapters talking about. I have six sisters. I was raised by essentially two mother figures. I was surrounded by, you know, Asian women all my life, and so I saw firsthand what they had to deal with, and it was necessary to spend time talking about the stereotypes and mythologies that they have to wrestle with here in the United States, which they still wrestle with, by the way.
There's so much good first-person material in this book. Our audience really has to pick it up and read it to get all of the wonderful stories that you've written. What specifically would you like our audience to know about right now about your book?
That's a fair question. I would say, ironically, that even though I spend most of the book talking about race, talking about Asians and blacks and whites and looking through the lens of race in interpreting my own experience, I actually come to a conclusion at the end of the book that race is not the best lens through which to look at my experience or the experience of other people. What I had to grapple with was only minimally related to race. I had to deal with the greater problem of shame, which in my life had formed around the issue of race. But everyone, at some point in their lives, deals with the idea that they don't live up to some ideal and live with a certain kind of shame, and could be about being not tall enough, not thin enough, maybe you don't have enough money, or you come from the wrong family, or you don't have enough education, whatever it may be. The more I learn about race, the more I read about it, the more I talk to people who studied it their whole lives, really the idea that humanity is divided into these separate and distinct and disparate groups with clear boundaries has been disproven by science a long time ago, decades ago. Humanity really is more of a continuum, and that people belong on the same continuum, and there are no clear breaks between these so-called races. I think it makes much more sense to talk about population groups and to talk about ethnicities, which have to do more with culture rather than any kind of biological factors.